You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and we are here with a special episode talking to the amazing Tilly Walden. Tilly, welcome to the podcast. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for bearing with me. I'm at a conference, and I didn't know if I could make it work, but here I am on the phone, like old school radio, calling in to discuss fun and time.
Yeah, we're going to give away some concert tickets later on, so we'll get into that later. No, I'm kidding.
I would love that.
Yeah, I mean, we should. I'll try to buy some while we're talking. No, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I know this is a very busy weekend for you, but I'm excited to talk about Clementine Volume 3. Book 3 is out in comic book stores now, July 8th.
That's right.
It's coming out in bookstores, but we're going to talk about, I want to talk about some general topics, but I also want to get into spoilers. So for anybody who hasn't read it yet, I do want to put a very, very big spoiler warning here, because this is the final book in the Clementine trilogy. So obviously some big stuff goes down here. But let's take a big step back. I feel like we talked about this a little bit with the second volume, but now that this is in the rear view mirror, this trilogy, how has your artistic process evolved from, I want to say 2022 when the first book came out, but I know obviously you were working on it for a while before that.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I feel like now that we're at this last book, most of the people I've talked to tend to ask, like, how does it feel? The trilogy's done, but no one has actually asked about the evolution of my artistic process. But I really haven't mused on it that much, but as I think about it, it's my process has changed a lot. And I think that one of the biggest shifts is that when I am penciling, which is I really don't thumbnail, I make an outline for a story and then I just kind of jump right in and I start penciling the book. But in the past, I penciled books kind of willy-nilly. I was just like, this sounds nice. This looks good. I like that. Whatever. I kind of let things flow. I trusted that like the editorial on the other side would help me make it stronger, which has historically always been the case for me. But by the time I got to book three, I found myself being a lot more intentional when I was writing scenes, when I was writing dialogue. I was being more intentional at an earlier stage. And I think it's because I realized like, you know, I can be loosey-goosey early in the process and do this work on the back end, but why not just try and be a little more serious with the narrative from the get-go? And I think I've just gotten better at my in-scene writing. I've gotten better at making, to me, what feels like scenes that are kind of more narratively driven and like a little more focused and a little tighter. So I feel really good and excited about how my writing process has changed. I think that there's so much story in these books. It's three different locations. It's Clementine and her buds, but there is kind of a rotating cast around them. And it was so much to deal with and to think about. I think that like making these three books, I kind of learned to kind of, what am I trying to say? Like I kind of learned to sort of sit up straight and kind of go into it with like a level of seriousness that I maybe hadn't had before, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you talking about having a little bit more of an improvisational process on the previous books. Given given this intentionality that you brought into book three, how did that affect the art side? Did it make it easier because you had it a little more planned out? Did it feel too locked in or not change it at all?
You know, the art process is still very much the same, where even with more intention, I pencil the book to a degree that it's like, it's easy to read, you can see most of it, but I still did, even with book three, the same thing that I've done with my 15 other graphic novels, which is when I'm inking, I just change things. I just constantly, I just sort of ignore what's beneath me, because I would do it either with blue lines for Clementine, other books I use like a light pad. I still had this like constant nagging force in my head that was like, this composition could be tighter, this character could be moved over here. So I was still constantly shifting things in the art till the very end. And I think it's because that like making compositional choices is really is like a lot of work, and there's so many panels in these books that by the time I get to the inks, I usually have kind of wrestled with the characters in the world enough to be able to make the best compositional choice. But it's really hard for me to do that earlier on.
Getting into the plot a little bit, you talk about this in the back matter, but you have been at a very different stage of life with every single book that you've done here. You had a baby before this and are taking care of a newborn. I mean, I guess I sort of have a two-pronged question here. How much of yourself then are you putting into the books? And I can certainly, given knowing what's happened in the plot, feel at least a little bit of that. And then how much does that change how you are actually creating the books, given that your life situation is changing?
Yeah, I think the books got progressively more personal to me as they got on. You know, the first one is the sort of most personal element is that like a lot of the names are names of people in my life. My wife's sisters are named Olivia and Georgia, and her brother is Tim, which are like all characters in the first book. With book two, I feel like my wife and I wanted to start a family, and we were working on that, and Olivia was pregnant in the book, and Rika's at the same time, I was like starting to go to the synagogue more. I was like connecting with my rabbi and like interested more in Judaism because I'm Jewish. And all that stuff with Rika and Judaism was like totally taken from my life. And then book three got like the most personal of all, which is it opens with a birth scene.
Right.
It's very much taken from my own birth, which was just like a miserable haul, but you get a nice little baby at the end of it. And it's like, it's really raw. It's really personal. I think there's a line in there where Olivia feels like she failed and she sucks at this. She did such a bad job at giving birth, which is how I felt after I gave birth. I felt like I did a really bad job, which is ridiculous. I birthed a human. It's all fine now, but that was how I felt. I think, interestingly, I think book three has so much fiction to it. Like, I've never been a part of like a girl cult in Greenland that involves violent rituals in order to find love and understanding. I've never done that, but I think the books are really personal, and they've gotten progressively more so. But it's nice actually to end the series with my life so changed, because Clementine's life has changed. And her friends' lives have changed. And it's just been such a lovely reflection for all of us together, the real ones and the not real ones, to feel like we're different after these years spent on this series.
You touched on the plot of this one a little bit, but for anybody who hasn't read it, or just a reminder if somebody's listening later and it's been a while, Clementine now finds herself in Greenland in this walled-off city that, as you said, there's a lot of women there. There's a cult going on the outside, is a way of putting it kindly. One very specific thing that I thought was such an interesting choice is you have a lot of the dialogue is, I believe, in Danish with no translation. My guess there was that's putting us in Clem's position where she can't speak it, but I'd love to hear from you why you made that decision.
Yeah, you know, I think it makes for actually kind of a frustrating reading experience to see text in a language you don't know. But it's a book series called Clementine, and I felt really strongly that it ultimately all comes back to her, and it ultimately all comes back to her perspective. And I thought a lot about how it was for me when I was young and in foreign countries for the first time, and how out of the loop I felt, how hard it was to be somewhere where I couldn't communicate. It's a very huge learning experience for every young person when they first feel kind of othered by a culture and a society that is not their own. It really expands your worldview, but also limits you in a lot of ways. And you then have a choice, like, do I try and learn and understand, or do I stay on the outside? So yeah, there's a lot of Danish in the book. There's some Greenlandic as well. I had to find a translator and find someone to translate. I wrote dialogue for all those side characters, for the main characters when they speak in Danish or Greenlandic. They're saying real stuff that it has to do with the plot, but it's all been translated. And I think the only people who can really get the most out of these books are people who speak all three languages, English, Danish, and Greenlandic, of which I'm sure there are plenty of people who have that. But yeah, it was a conscious choice to really highlight the fact that Clementine is in a country where she is not in the majority. This is not the place that she grew up, and she has limits. You know, I think Clementine is such a, in a lot of ways, a very classic sort of badass female character. She definitely was in the video games. And I really wanted to try to kind of push on that and see, like, where are her limitations? Where can she not be so badass? Because, like, where is her struggle? And, like, she can kill a zombie, but she does not know how to ask someone for directions in this language. And I think that's such a fabulous juxtaposition, to be so strong, to be so powerful, but those powers don't translate all over the world. Like, this world is so varied, this world is so complex, and not everything works in every other place.
I mean, just talking about the world, and this is taking a big swerve, but I believe in the last season of Daryl Dixon, Carol made a stopover on Greenland very briefly in one of the episodes, and met some.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they met some weird, like, grass zombies there. It was very freaky.
I didn't actually know that. I should know that. I thought I was the first one to take The Walking Dead to Greenland. Maybe not.
She goes to, like, the middle of Greenland, so it's far enough away that her plane wouldn't fly in the back.
How do you get in the middle of Greenland? I don't know. No, you're right. It's all good. I'm gonna investigate these grass zombies. This sounds very interesting.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. They did a good job with those. To get back to the book, though, and again, I want to give a very big spoiler warning here, but this floored me. Rika's death in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
As you probably survived, you know, I've read your books, I've read every issue of The Walking Dead, watched every episode of the TV shows, but that was something that I have never seen before in the franchise, and I was really struck by, why was it important for her to just die?
You know, for a few reasons, but I had been musing, poor Rika, I had been musing on Rika's death actually since book one. And I never talked about it when people asked me, like, is the series planned? The answer was no. And that's true. But I had always sort of wondered, it's just something that I was like, I don't know. I don't know if this character is going to live, even though she means a lot to me. I especially after, it, I think I had two experiences that sort of made me think about this. The first one being my wife's sister, who is young and healthy and amazing. She's not dead. I will preface that by saying that she is very much alive, but she got two pulmonary embolisms in her lungs very suddenly, and without fast medical treatment, would have died. And she is, like, just like us, walking around, living her life. And the amount of fear that provoked in me, that provoked in all of us, her whole family, and her, just this was intense. It was just like, oh my God, like, she's predisposed to blood clots. My wife's family is predisposed to blood clots. If you didn't go to regular checkups and have a doctor or understand symptoms, it's like, if she was in the apocalypse, she'd be gone right now. And it made me consider, wow, like, it's uncommon right now, but, like, there are young people who die. Like, this this happens, like things that we don't understand or that we do medically but can't really do much about. I don't know. And it made me start to notice all of these kind of medical events in people's lives around me. And then I have my son, and he was born. And in the process of him being born, I wanted to die. I thought it was so hard for me. And there's something about life, creating new life, bringing new life out, and how close it brings you to death, that this was all on my mind. This was swirling around as I was considering Ricca and considering this book. And I realized, my God, the most violent thing that could ever happen to Clementine is unexplained illness, is mm-hmm. just the fact that someone would just fall over and be gone. And there would be no way for Clementine to know that it was a blood clot and it went up to her brain and she fell over and she died. That's why she had a headache. That's why she died. And it just seemed like, the final frontier for this girl, for this question of existence, because she knows everything about violent death, but she knows nothing about the very real other part of this, which is just that some people just go, and their time is up. And I don't know. As soon as I thought about it, I was like, I was compelled by it. I was interested in it. I wanted to write it. I wanted to work on it. And I think that it's especially in the Walking Dead universe, it's just so unexpected, even though it would absolutely be a part of their world. It's hard to think about writing a death in a Walking Dead comic that isn't zombie based or that isn't mm-hmm. like human on human violence based. It just doesn't really happen. And I think that, I don't know, that's how I came to it. And once I was there and I told my editor about it, I was like, I really didn't know if my editor would go for it because, you know, he's a Walking Dead editor and he worked at DC and Alex like knows classic stories and is generally always telling me like, I want a villain. I want zombie action. And usually I give that to him, but I was like, Alex, I want Ricca to die and she's just going to die. No one's going to hurt her. No one's going to do anything wrong. There's going to be no danger. She's just going to get sick. Suddenly she's going to die. And Alex was like, what the, like, oh my God. And he understood pretty quickly what I was doing, which was that like, this is a terror and a grief that Clementine doesn't know, but this is a terror and a grief that Clementine can live through, just like she can live through everything else. And it just felt like the right sentiment for the end of the series. But it's, you know, it's intense to kill, especially for me as a queer creator, it's a lot to kill a queer character. There's a lot of feelings, especially in the queer community, that like everyone is sick of the gay characters dying. No one wants that to happen. And I understand that and I respect it. But I also felt like, I don't know, I felt like Ricca's time was up.
And I mean, I think you covered it, but the thing that really impressed on me is exactly what you're saying, that it isn't, oh, it's another society that fell apart, or, oh, the hordes of zombies came through, or anything like that. It really forces Clementine, I thought, into the situation where she's going from thinking about the present and moment to moment to really start thinking about the future and what's beyond that. You know, certainly it holds her in place for a little bit and it holds her in that grief and sadness. Yeah. But then she starts to think about what's next without jumping too far, which I think really ties into how you end the book. And it also enters that meta narrative of like, we are ending the series. We are ending the story of this character who has been through multiple video games, now multiple graphic novels.
Yeah. No, it's you described it exactly. I think that it's sort of the most adult experience she's ever had, which is to realize that our time is limited. And what's crazy is like these characters in the Walking Dead universe are very deeply familiar with the fact that time is limited. They are deeply familiar with the fact that death is around the corner, but death has like a changing face. It is not, you know, zombies do not change the fact that people get blood clots. And it is the same terror. It's the same violence. It just isn't visible. It's inside of you. And I think I was thinking a lot about like kind of unseen violence in this final book. Kind of like the Maria's manipulation of these girls and kind of the sort of grooming almost aspect to it. The violence of a sudden unexplained death. But despite all of that violence and despite all of the violence in the series, I hope that people see and feel the optimism and the hope at the end of the book, because I really wasn't interested in ending the series in tragedy, even though I kind of did end it in tragedy. I wanted, you know, Clementine to live on and be okay and be grateful that she got any time with Ricca at all, which is, when I think about my wife and I think about my son, I am grateful that I have days with them at all. I think that it's tenuous, our tether on mortality. And I think that my feelings about that are definitely like poured all over this book.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You mentioned Maria, who is also known as the gardener in this book, and she's the kind of ultimate final boss villain in a certain way. But correct me if I'm wrong, there was also an unused character that Robert Kirkman had called the gardener. Is this the same character, or do they just share a name?
Yeah, so I don't know about Kirkman's character, but the concept of the garden was Robert's idea. And it was one that when I was working on book two, I just sort of out of the blue got an email from my editor that was like, by the way, Robert has this idea for putting zombies in the ground halfway and there or something like that. And they flail around and they can bite you and they're a garden of zombies. I was like, okay, this is a strange email to get. Thanks, Alex. I'm going to keep working on book two. But it was a really cool idea. And I was like, oh, let's use this. Let's use this in book three. This seems great. The putting Maria in there and this concept of the garden and how it all worked out was all original to me. But I have Robert to thank for the notion of burying zombies in the ground in the rocky soil of Greenland. So that was genius. Thank you, Robert.
Her origin is another point of the book that I as a parent found so sad. And I don't know, I mean, as we're talking about parent stuff, but for anybody listening to this, just to sort of recap her origin, Maria, we find out, was left behind by her family. There were three seats on a plane. They took her half sister and left her. And then 5 years later, we're like, we're back for you. And she didn't want to talk to them. My thoughts immediately went to that Sophie's Choice moment of, oh my God, could you imagine being in that position as a parent? Where did that come from? Was it from that feeling? Was it from Maria's perspective? Both? How did that come about?
You know, it was a little bit of everything. I think the first reason I thought about it is in researching Greenland, I was researching like their airport and the airline, and it's a really small airline that operates out of out of Greenland, and I was like, oh God, they like wouldn't have a lot of planes. And so if people are trying to leave when the zombies come, I mean, this is a logistical question that I'm sure would happen all over the place with an apocalypse, but like a limited number of seats and having to sort of having a family that also is sort of already struggling for whatever reason. I think a lot about kids who find themselves in situations where their parents don't really like them. And it's so hard for me to fathom as a parent who adores my son, but as a kid, I didn't feel very liked by my parents. And I feel like I knew other kids who like found themselves in this situation. And it's, especially with a toddler, it's so hard to imagine growing to dislike this beautiful person that you're raising. But I also know that it happens a lot. And because parents are people, kids are people, and especially Maria, who as a character I thought of as like a pretty flawed person and a struggling person, I was like, there's no way her parents would take her with her. They'd be like, this girl is nuts. I don't want her to come with us. Like, this is a way to kind of offload her. And yeah, I think that's what I was thinking about. I think, even though as a parent, I can never imagine anything other than unconditionally loving my son, I find myself still very interested in writing unhappy families and in writing dynamics between parents and children and brothers and sisters that are very much lacking in love, which I, you know, of course the root of all of that was myself growing up and feeling like I lacked a lot of love. So I just like, I keep coming back to it. I keep chewing on that old bone.
Yeah. After Clem rebels against the gardener, she gets conked on the head and then is planted in the garden, at which point Barnwell, the cat, shows up. Maybe I'm being like too crazy theory-brained here, but is there an interpretation where Clem actually died and everything after that is a dream? Because mainly I'm wondering about how the cat got to Greenland.
Oh, wow. Well, so the cat came with them. The cat has been surreptitiously in the background.
I got to go back.
The cat was on the boat. Yeah. I see, in book two, Barnwell makes it to Prince Edward Island with them and then makes it on the boat. And how this cat is alive, don't ask me. I don't know. He's a survivor. Okay. He's like Clementine. He's a survivor. I like this theory, although it's not, I don't think that's it. And okay. I think I like that reading. I've always loved, I actually really like when stories do wonky stuff like that. But no, it's Clem is alive. Barnwell is there. Also my editor and my publisher would never, ever let me hurt Clementine.
Okay.
I'm pretty protective of this girl. You haven't seen Protective. There is no, I think I talked at one point about like a plot line where like Clementine gets in this like tussle with this person and like loses a finger. And my editor was like, no, this girl has already lost a limb below the knee. She's been through enough. We're stopping with that. We will only do emotional pain and some bruising and some cuts. So yeah, Clementine's got to be alive or I would get in a lot of trouble. They let me kill Ricka, even though they were all very sad about it.
Yeah. I mean, that brings up a little, I do want to get back and just talk about the end of the book in a second, but that brings up a little bit of a side topic. You, with this book, have intersected the Venn diagram of comic book fans and video game fans who can be, I'm going to say this nicely, very passionate about what they care about. How
very magnanimous of you.
Thank you. How have you dealt with that over the course of these three graphic novels?
You know, it hasn't been great. Mm-hmm. The way I have dealt with it is I, of course, do not have a public email address. If I was able to be contacted, I would have to leave the country. And I have not looked at my notifications or comments or messages on Instagram for, I believe, 4 years. Mm. So I literally have not clicked on it. I think people forget that that is an option. If you are facing a certain amount of internet backlash or video game fan backlash, which is a fun and unique version that I have. I have not seen it. I have had a lot of people around me who kind of monitor what's being said and let me know when things get to the death threat level or to scary places. But personally, I have not really been too affected. The only things I've seen have been total accidents where I like needed to look back at a post to reference a date of something. And I accidentally saw a comment that one of these anti-Clementine accounts was like accusing me of pedophilia or something to that effect. And that was unique. I hadn't seen that one yet, but also because I'm not involved in the discourse, I have not really seen where they've gone. And trust me, I don't want to know. But it sucks. It's disappointing. It's really, look, every fan has their right to have their opinion on what they care about. And people really care about the Telltale Games. People really care about Clementine. A couple people care about my books. No ill will toward, oh, thank you. That's nice. I'm going to add you to that list.
All right.
I have no ill will towards anyone who feels like I did it wrong or they don't want to read my books because they love the games and they feel like I sort of stepped on something that was previously great and I made it bad. Like, they can think that. My books that aren't about Clementine, my regular books, there are people who don't like them. Like, as an author, it's par for the course. Like, it's all opinions, it's all feedback, it's okay. The fact that it's escalated into like online harassment, that's where I'm like, well, this is just the pattern, because a woman has never written The Walking Dead before. A woman has never drawn it. Neither has a queer person. And I'm pretty sure someone out there in the world, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. And they're coming after me. I'm like, this is so predictable. Why are we doing this in the way that we've done it with everyone else? Because I really firmly believe that if a man was in my shoes and making this series, this backlash would not have happened. But I also think that a male creator would not have made the choice that I made, which, not to get too niche with it, a lot of this comes back to the choice of Clementine leaving AJ, which ties into a lot of the themes of this book and themes that I'm interested in about our failure as parents, our failure as people, our failure as women, the expectations that we are held to when we take care of someone else. And even after having my son, maybe even more so after my son, I stand by that decision that Clementine made. She was a teenage girl taking care of a child. And when traumatized teenagers have to make decisions, they usually make the wrong ones. I certainly recall from my own traumatized teenage female years that I was constantly doing the wrong thing. I was disappointing people. I was leaving people behind. And these are the decisions I'm interested in as a storyteller. So, but that's what started it all. And I think that if I hadn't done that, it would have, people might not have really liked the books, but I don't know if they would be making accounts and calling me a pedophile. So it has been unique. I can say with clarity that I have not experienced anything like this on any other books of mine. So it has, I'll be honest that it makes me very cautious about working on any IP related to a video game ever again, to the point where I think I can go ahead and say I'm never going to work on anything related to a video game again, because this is just kind of unnecessary.
Watch tomorrow. You get a letter from The Last of Us people being like, hey, can you follow Ellie's story real quick and just do something?
Can you even imagine? I would have... Oh my God. No, that's crazy. Talk about wild fandom. Even though like I'm sure there's good folks hanging out in the Clementine Telltale fandom, but I'm not a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, I will get back to the book in a second, but I do feel very strongly about a couple of things. One of which is that like you were touching on, the story is the story. You are creating the story there. And you know, yeah. There's, I don't want to get in too much of it because you're not reading it, but I've certainly seen discussions about like what is canon, what is not canon. And I've been reading comic books for decades at this point, and it's all canon until it's not, or follow whatever you want as long as you're enjoying it. And the other flip side that I'd say about what you're saying about like the Clementine fans, the negative voices I always find are so much louder than other voices, and the other voices don't want to participate because they don't want to be shouted over by everybody else. So I don't know. Anyway,
it's always a small group of people. It's never like, I don't have like a horde of haters coming after me, but it's hard not to be affected by sort of the violent tone and the like the degree of the harassment that just feels like a really shocking degree of anger for what is, I hate to say it, but a fictional character.
Yeah.
Like this is not a big deal. This is like, it was a video game and now it's a comic. This isn't like political legislation. This isn't something that I think people need to be getting up in arms about. I do think that it does actually express how successful the games were and how moving people found it to be Clementine in season one, to play as her, to watch her grow. I think that it created a really strong, like, sort of parental caring sense for Clementine, which speaks to the power of the games. And I love the games. Not a little girl anymore. She's a teenager and she's an adult. And I also am an adult who has some experience being a teenage girl. And I think that because of that, I was a good choice to work on this series. And I think that I'm really proud of Skybound for asking me and supporting me in this work, because I think they made like a kind of a bold move picking me. I'm an odd choice for The Walking Dead. There's no way I'm not an odd choice. But I think they knew that I could maybe bring it to like an interesting frontier. And, you know, here we are with book three, where Clementine's like going back to school to learn to write and her girlfriend has a blood clot and drops dead. So, you know, we're in an interesting frontier.
Yeah. I do want to ask you about the last page because I was so struck by it. Clementine, yeah. We get three panels there. Clementine says everyone's waiting. We see an open door and then we see darkness with flakes of snow or stars or however you want to interpret it. And to that point, I don't even want to ask you like what's happening, because certainly I have my own thoughts about there. More, I want to ask you, how did you strike on this as the final sequence, not just for the trilogy, but also potentially Clementine through the video games, through the books, et cetera, like the last that we're going to see of her, at least for a little while.
You know, it came to me pretty easily when I knew I wanted the final scene to be Clementine coming in from the snowy weather and joining her family, going into her home that she will, in my mind, live in for 20 years, 30 years. To me, like what she's stepping into is the rest of her life. But I spent a lot of time figuring out, and that's the fact that she says that everyone's waiting. And I think I ultimately, the sensation that I was looking for in that text and the sensation of the paneling there is a way to call back to who is here and who is not here. And I think like not seeing who is inside is a way to say that everyone who is waiting for her in that room is everyone she has ever known, alive and dead. Her mom is there. Her dad is there. Lee is there. Penny is there. Duck is there. Rick is there. Amos is there. Olivia's sister is there. Like everyone, Tim is there. Everyone who's been lost, and everyone who remains. And I think that I loved the sound of the word everyone, because it shows no judgment about who it is, and the idea that they're waiting for her. I think the thing I was thinking about with this series is how we all are kind of waiting to figure ourselves out. We're waiting to find some peace. We're waiting to find some happiness. And when we decide that we're ready to be happy, that we're ready to be okay, that we're ready to look the rest of our lives in the face directly, when we're ready for that, it starts. It happens. And I think I was like, they have been waiting. Everyone around Clementine has been waiting for three books for this girl to be like, I'm okay. And I'm going to be okay with everything that happens going forward because I've made it this far and I will continue to go on. That was all in my head. That's interesting. I haven't had a chance to talk about the last page at all. Every interview I've done has been very spoiler free. That's kind of what the sequencing and the text is for me means. But my hope too was that I could make it just unspecific enough that people could decide for themselves what it represents.
Yeah. I'm going to choose to decide that it represents that it's Barnwell is in fact an angel who's bringing her to heaven. And that's what we see at the end. But so I'm just going to stick with my theory.
I actually really like that. That's beautiful. That works because if Clementine has died and Barnwell is her guide to mm-hmm. take her to the other side, you know, that's a good interpretation. I like
Thank
it.
You.
I'm going to hold on to that one.
All right. I actually believe it less and less more I say it out loud, but that's all right. We'll go with it anyway.
No, it's great.
Yeah. So now that this experience, just to wrap up here, I know you're going to be on tour for a little while going around with the book and with some other awesome folks. What is next for you? What are you working on next? I think based on our conversation, probably not more Walking Dead, but are there more graphic novels in your future?
Yeah, it's been a wild ride working on The Walking Dead these last few years, and all my love to Skybound and Robert Kirkman and everyone I've worked with. But it's true, I am not working on The Walking Dead right now. I'm working on something pretty different tonally. I'm slowly making my way back to original graphic novels. Kind of, I've done this era with. It's been 4 years. It's been 5 books. I did my 3 Walking Dead. I did 2 with Segan and Sarah, and I am now working on my first historical book. I've never done. It's a real history of 2 women from the 1800s, and it's all real. But there's no imagery I have of them except for a really small silhouette. So all of the imaginings of their lives and their story is being driven by me. So it's really different format. It's on a grid. It's like a 12 panel grid, done kind of in a vignette style. I love, in Kate Beaton's work, especially when she does vignettes, when she like titles certain single pages of comics and then you read it and then you read the next one. So I'm going back towards that format of like sort of titling single pages and doing these condensed short 12-panel stories that all build into a larger narrative about who these women were in the 1800s in Vermont, of course. So that is what I am working on. A lot of the thinking I did in The Walking Dead about how to survive an apocalypse is kind of coming up again, where I'm like, it's really hard to do laundry in 1810, just like it's hard for Clementine to do laundry. So I guess some things stay the same.
Yes. Tilly, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Congratulations on the graphic novels. They're awesome. And for
thank
anybody
you.
Listening out there, stay tuned. We'll have 2 tickets for Chumbawamba coming up right after this.
Thank you so much.
Blow your mind with their comics and sales. And extend them already, extend it, I don't know.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.